The House Revenue Committee for May 18, 2007 will come to order. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2653 and House Bill 3018. Mazin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the two bills in front of you both come to you from the House Transportation Committee. And they both basically talk about revenue raising issues for different policy options. But to go over them one by one, House Bill, let's go with the easy one.
Yes.
Which one? Let's go easy.
The easy one.
The easy one. You know, all transportation revenue bills usually are easy bills. There's no controversy, no problems with them. So that the easiest of both is the one that raises the gas tax, and it's an increase of about 5 cents, and then another 5 cents increase in about 5 years, and every 5 years, and so on. So the increase in the gas tax, as you know, I included in your packet. About the bill, a little bit of background and history about the history of how the gas tax has been, what kind of revenue it brings as the highway fund taxes. The gas tax in general, as you know, as with all transportation taxes, has two sides of the story. It always have to be balanced between light vehicles and heavy vehicles, as in the constitutional requirement. The gas tax, most of it will be paid by the light vehicles. Most of it, because the other parts of the whatever is diesel tax, some of it would be paid by heavy vehicles. However, the rest means it needs to be balanced with the weight mile tax. Now, here comes the different balances based on what kind of uses would be used for those revenue increases. But in general, having left all of these details of the highway cost allocation, which you have been oriented with and now these Representative Berger is a pro in doing these things. We would increase about $26.6 or $27 million, 16.6 per year. So that, in what it will look like, is about $157 million then, with your weight mile tax revenue coming in the 2007-09 biennium, expecting that it gets implemented in January 1st. Now, having talked quickly about this, that's House Bill 2653, House Bill 3018 does few things. Actually, it touches different segments of the transportation areas and the revenues. It increases vehicle registrations, a whole number of them. And if you look at about the third page of the engrossed version of the bill, you would start looking at which the fifth page, starting line 19, that's section 10, that's where the different increases in registration fees would occur. The most prevalent one is the increase in passenger vehicle, going to $39 per year from 27. However, almost all types of vehicles do have that increase, as you could see from that page. Also included in the increases of registration is the increases that would be affected or levied by weight. as you know, heavy or truck registration is by weight class, not only straightforward, and therefore that long schedule that you would have on page 6 and 7 of the bill. Now, of course, that also needs a balancing act of what kind of revenue paid by light and what kind of revenue paid by heavy vehicles. As it stands in the bill, it's about 79.21%, and that is probably in need of a little adjustment in order to come to the practical constitutional requirement of what needs to be done. That means at least that section of the bill needs slightly more adjustments to be working in the right direction. The second section of the bill increases plate manufacturing fees and makes that on January 1st, 2010. So what it allows DMV to do is to recoup its costs of the manufacturing fee by rule. So it's administrative rule that it could recoup its costs, and then adds $20 and $40 per plate, $20 per one plate, $40 per plate, and starts that program in January 1st, 2010, and along with this program tries to manufacture, if you will, that rhymes with manufacturing plate fees, manufacture the program of bonding program of about $200 million to be repaid by the 25% of the revenues that would be generated by the plate manufacturing fee. And that $200 million would be a program that is primarily based on congestion relief and the Congestion Relief Act, as this would be termed and called. Now, some of the issues that you would find with this is also the level of participation of the different vehicle classes and what kind of payments would be required on both sides. Also, some of the technical problems that need to be fixed with this is things like fees for example, vehicle registration fees. This is from the previous one with the farm vehicles and so on. This ends up with the farm vehicles, the lower classes paying higher than the heavy classes and so on. That, in a quick nutshell, is where these things are, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mazin. We appreciate your summary of these bills. I see some members here, and I'd like to hear from them first so they can get on with their other committee work. Representative Hunt, Senator Metzger, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. He did a good job introducing two bills. He described the first one as the easy one. I'm not sure he was talking politically easy or organizationally easy. So I think the first one is the much more challenging one. But House Bill 3018 is really a merger of two bills. A set of proposals that Senator Metzger and Senator Starr put together that I'll let them talk about in detail, and a proposal that Representative Beyer and I introduced on the House side, which we ended up modeling exactly on the vehicle registration fees that I think all of us, except for Representative Olson, because he was not here yet, voted on in 2003 as part of OTIA 3. So you'll see the $12 a year increase is exactly the same amount that we increased the vehicle registration fee as part of OTIA 3 in 2003. Frankly, we arrived at that. We were going to do something slightly higher, and then as we started to look at all the corresponding changes in other fees that need to be made, I ultimately told Legislative Council, you know, you did this once in OTIA 3, just go back and take the exact same figures and plug them in again. This does not include, as part of OTIA 3, we also did some title fee increases that are not included here. But in terms of the vehicle registration fee, exact same structure. Even though we did just increase the vehicle registration fee in 2003, we still have one of the lowest vehicle registration fees in the country. And increasing $12 a year, especially I think once our constituents are reminded, as we reminded them as part of OTIA 3, that those dollars are all going into roads, I think is something that is very sellable. The basic three things I would leave you with. One, I think we've got to just recognize the massive need we have out there. Need in terms of the disinvestment we've made over a generation or more. That's true in maintenance and preservation. It's true in modernization. We just got a huge backlog of need that we need to respond to, and the time for action. That the longer we wait, the more expensive it gets, the more congested it gets, the more our economy is impacted, the more commuters are impacted, the slower freight slows down, and so the time for action, I believe, is and I know my colleagues beside me believe is really to get moving on something now. And the third and last point is to really focus on what is possible to get done right now. I think you're going to hear testimony, a wide range of views, from doing probably nothing to doing everything now. And I think the challenge is how do we strike that balance of doing something that is substantive enough that we can begin to address these needs and to demonstrate real results to our constituents, but also that then gives us that credibility to build a bigger package in the future. I would put a special pitch in, and you'll notice that the vehicle registration fee, 25% of it, as designed in this bill, would go to projects of statewide significance, which is a key category of projects which are very much focused on relieving major freight congestion, major passenger congestion. Unfortunately, that is a set of projects that the Transportation Commission has identified and are significant projects that there is not adequate funding identified to get them done. So I would make sure, clearly the entire package should not go to that, but I would urge you to make sure that a significant chunk of whatever we do goes to those projects of statewide significance so we get those done. And with that, I will stop there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, Chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, along with Vice Chair Senator Starr. We wanted to talk just briefly about an overall package that is moving through the Assembly, which you have part of before you today, that we have dubbed the Congestion Relief Act of 2007. I won't reiterate what Representative Hunt has said, because I think this is part of the reason that we have put this package together. And see how 3018 fits into this package. Senator Starr has passed out kind of a summary of what the entire act is. Senate Bill 566A is about to be heard in the Senate Transportation Subcommittee on Ways and Means. It does a number of factors. Recognizes the huge need that we have in transportation in the state and that our revenues are not able to meet that need and that gap is growing greater at all times. And so the first part of 566 is to work with a joint committee on transportation and preparing for either the February 08 or January 09 and look at coming up with a new funding source of revenue for transportation to supplement our existing sources, to look at how we're going to fund regional transportation needs. We'll be looking at existing statutes as well as creating new statutes for the regions of our state to be able to address that with a new funding source to supplement our existing historical sources, which are registration fees, essentially title fees, and gas taxes. It was ironically, you may have read in the paper a couple of days ago, Metro has basically is looking at doing exactly the same thing that we're talking about, and they want to bring stakeholders together and go for a vote in 08 on a regional transportation plan. Well, that's exactly what 566 does, is bring folks together and say, how do we do regional transportation? It also is going to have consultants take a look at the current properties owned by the Oregon Department of Transportation and how we might maximize cash flow from some of those properties. The reality is there's a lot of property that ODOT uses that could be used for other purposes in addition to meeting its mission as ODOT properties. For example, i.e. land, very expensive land under bridges in the city of Portland that could be perhaps leased out for construction for a revenue stream while they're still serving the same purpose they are for ODOT. So, how can we utilize this? I think it's really important to tell our constituents that we're also trying to maximize revenue streams from our existing assets that we have in the Oregon Department of Transportation. The third part of that is going to look at the projects of statewide significance and perhaps others that have since come to the forefront since that list was made, and to really sharpen the number two pencils, look at what those needs are, what it's going to cost to construct those, are the assumptions we made still accurate, can some of those be done in pieces that might meet the congestion needs of this state. And the reason for that is to help really put together very clearly what that need is for congestion relief as we build towards a request for a significant funding package in the 2009 session so that we have something to go out with the public and say, as we did with OTIA 3, with the bridges, this is the need, this is what can help relieve that, this is what you would buy. Because I think it's very, very important that our constituents need to know what they're buying for whatever we ask them to help pay for. And then in your bill, House Bill 3018, is an immediate start on that program, which would generate through a short-term 10-year bond $200 million, twice as large, I might point out, as the Connect Oregon package that we have, is to begin in congestion relief with projects already identified by the Oregon Transportation Commission in their STIP process, in which there is no money identified, but which those projects have already been vented on a smaller scale but with significant potential throughout the regions of the state for congestion relief. And this would be to increase the license plate, the actual physical plate fee that you pay one time when you actually get plates. It's a bill you passed earlier that I had over in my committee when this idea came across. This would be an easy way to generate some money that we can then bond to start some congestion and relief right now and get a couple hundred million dollars into the pipeline. So that has been put into 3018 as well as the existing language that you had in your committee. With that is the detail breakdown of how that would be spent, and we followed the same methodology when we reached consensus on the program for the last 2 years of Connect Oregon. We use a very similar process of allocation on that for these different projects. And we believe this is an important thing that we can actually get started on getting some money on the ground. We think it is a very, very low-hanging fruit and something we want to move forward on. With that, I'd like to, Mr. Chair, turn it over to Senator Starr and then any questions you folks may have.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Starr.
Thank you very much. For the record, Senator Starr, State Senator from District 15 in Western Washington County. Appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I appreciate the comments of my colleagues to my right. I guess what I'd like to talk about is just kind of my own personal kind of history of dealing with transportation funding in this building. And really what it requires is defining or finding that middle ground. It's like the art of the possible. We can overreach, we can go too far, and ultimately fail. It's trying to find that balance of how far we can go to get the job done, get the votes that are necessary to move packages. I'd also just like to remind us that there's a lot of construction that's going on in Oregon today. The work that many of us have done through OTIA 1, 2, and 3, the fruits of those votes, the fruits of those taxes that Oregon taxpayers are paying are on our infrastructure, are on our highways today. There's a lot of work zones that are out there, and that's because legislators, some of us that were here and some that have gone on, voted for packages that are funding those projects. Historically, in this building, in the decade of the 90s, there were transportation packages that passed one chamber or another but failed to pass the building completely. What I've found in my history here is that in order to get success, in order to move a package through this process, you need to find one. You need to find a package that generates support from the major stakeholders. If you end up trying to roll over the top of one major stakeholder or two in the process, ultimately that leads to failure. The success that we've had is when we've come to consensus from primarily the major stakeholders to put a package together. And I, sitting here this afternoon, am extremely optimistic that we are on the verge of that success, of having consensus, of having the major stakeholders lined up in support of a package that will get us dollars on the ground in the short term. Not huge dollars in the short term, but significant dollars, I think, as you look at the kinds of projects that can be funded with a $200 million bond in every district virtually across the state. And Senator Metzger has set up the bill in as a process that dollars will be spent in the congressional districts across the state. And believe me, you can identify projects quite easily to spend the $200 million. But what we're talking about is creating a process whereby legislators coming into probably the 09 session will have the foundation laid wherein we can come in and advocate for and pass a more comprehensive plan, a more comprehensive package. And I sit before you this afternoon in full agreement with Senator Metzger. I appreciate his leadership in bringing the Congestion Relief Act of 2007 together. It's creative. It's innovative. I think it addresses the needs of legislators who want to know what they're going to vote for and then ultimately what we're going to get for that vote. That takes time to kind of figure that out. But also our constituents. Oregonians are going to want to know what it is that we're going to build, what projects, you know, are on the list, so to speak. What kinds of investments are we asking Oregonians to make as we move forward? And I think those kinds of answers, questions can be answered in the process of leading up to a transportation package, a successful transportation package coming out of most likely, I think, the 2009 session, though, you know, if things move quickly, perhaps in our special session next year. It takes time. It takes a lot of work and effort to lay the foundation, lay the groundwork for a successful package. I think that what you have in House Bill 3018 that's part of Senator Metzger's plan, I think, begins that process. The other bill is a key part of it, absolutely a key part of it, Senate Bill 566. So with that, I will be quiet, and if there's questions, I'll be happy to answer those, but you've got a committee room full of individuals, I think, that want to talk to you this afternoon.
We do, and I'm very conscious of that. Thank you. Are there questions for these members? Representative Berger.
I have a question, but I also want to understand my packet a little bit. There is a -A7 amendment to 3018.
Yes.
Okay, but we are, when Mazin was discussing what's in the bill, he was referring to the printed A and gross. Okay, I want to make sure I was right on that. Representative Hunt, I wonder if you could pursue this notion of what the significance of the list of projects of statewide significance is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger. The State Transportation Commission several years ago did a comprehensive look statewide, as you can see from the list they came up with, because there are projects from all over the state, and applied a set of criteria. They were all large projects. They were all major freight congestion projects. And they all were projects that, at least at that point, did not have funding identified to fulfill them. Now, one project from the original list has been subsequently funded, the Pioneer Eddyville project. The remaining projects, although there have been pieces of investment, some pieces from OTIA 3, some other small federal pieces that have begun to fund the development of those, the overwhelming chunk of each of them remains unfunded. I think there are very legitimately probably another, I mean, I think it's worth, as Senator Metzger was saying, worth the Transportation Commission looking at perhaps coming up with projects of statewide significance too. I mean, much as we've had Connect Oregon too. What is that next set of projects that maybe when the first list was developed several years ago were not at the stage of congestion or not at the stage of need to make the list at that point, but to look at developing a second list. I think the challenge is not to skip over this first critical group of projects because we need to make sure we get them done. Otherwise, we're going to be in even worse shape in terms of congestion and freight mobility.
Wait.
Should I just one more minute? You may not be the one to answer this, but this list, when it was originally developed, was there any... it's a pretty static list. I think I have a complaint with it. It's a pretty static list, and yet, and it was developed, I don't know what year, but in the language of this bill, that holds a pretty front and center position, and I guess that bothers me a little. I don't know that you need to respond, but I would like to, as we talk about this, to have folks be aware that what is important transportation-wise is a moving point, as we saw in O2, in the OTIF packages and in all of these transportation infrastructure packages that we've looked at. So I'm just kind of putting on the record that I have some issues around this, and you don't need to necessarily respond to all of them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I would respond to that. I agree with you. I think that you look at our freight needs today, perhaps they're different than they were in 2001. And some of the congestion choke points, freight choke points, I'm not sure that the projects of statewide significance in their entirety would meet the criteria list if we were creating a new list today. And I'm thinking primarily about trying to move freight on I-5. And, you know, people get nervous when you start talking about changing that list, but at the end of the day, there are significant needs and significant freight choke points that aren't identified as projects of statewide significance today that I think are critically important to Oregon's overall economic health.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I would, and I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, I would agree there are absolutely additional freight choke points. But I think if you look at projects like the Sunrise Corridor, like Newburgh-Dundee, like the Highway 99W connector, like the granddaddy of them all, the Columbia River Crossing, I mean, those are major freight and passenger congestion choke points. And although it's absolutely true that there are others, I think the reason the list has been static is because we have not stepped up and made the investment in those projects. We need to both make sure these projects get built as well as identify and pursue those other projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the comments of the senator and the representative on this issue. It needs more explanation, or it needs more exploration.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Others? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony very much and your work on these packages. Representative Beyer and Representative Greenlech, please.
Mr. Chair, just to bring the committee's attention, the members of the committee, the list that the been talked about is identified in the second page, lines 14, 15, and 16 of the A and Gross talks about the State Commission identifying a list in May 2002. And then in section 4, it defines the five regions that pretty much go along the same five regions of ODOT and says specifies that out of those bonds at least 10% of go to each one of these regions as long as the region that has needs that have 10% projects in them. So that's also in section 4.
And are they also in the A7 amendments?
The A7, Mr. Chair.
It's organized in a different way.
Right.
Why don't you check on that, and let's hear from the representatives while you're doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Terry Beyer, and I represent House District 12, which is Springfield, and I chaired the Transportation Committee. And I was very happy to send these bills to you to keep the conversations going on transportation. We did put one amendment in the bill before we sent it over. There are others that are being talked about, some more aggressive and expansive than others. Depending on what we can see fit to do. We certainly have a dedication to keep working these bills this session and, if need be, into the interim and on to build the case for the need, which is definitely there. I guess it's just a matter of relaying that to the public. So I wanted to express that. There is an extremely dedicated group of stakeholders that want to work on this issue, want to get work done. My concern, because we do definitely have congestion issues in the state, but what we haven't been funding for a number of years and actually have taken money out of is maintenance. And this is a big issue in all of our areas, but especially more of an issue in rural areas than the congestion relief dollars would be. So whatever we do, I don't want to lose sight that we have two pieces of this that we need to cover if we are to go ahead with a transportation package. And with that, there are lots of people out here who want to talk, but I do want to address the projects of statewide significance, and I am at the risk of offending the majority leader. I think probably this is one you should follow up definitely with the department, but it's my understanding that this list did, I mean, there was no public process putting this list together. It was just a group of large, expensive projects that people felt were important that they put together that has kind of taken on a life of its own, even to the point where possibly back in Washington, D.C., they're asking, when you go ask for funding, is this on that list? When I don't think this is an appropriate request. And if we are going to have a list like that, we should be spending some time and process to develop that list that would take in these projects that are very important to the state. So with that, I will close, and hopefully we can continue to work on these bills. And hopefully, I know we have people that would like to have a more aggressive schedule than others, but there is a dedication to moving forward and hopefully getting some more dollars into transportation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33. Which includes the transportation corridors of Highway 26 and 217 and Highway 30 and other weird places. I'm here to speak to you about House Bill 2653. I understood you opened up both hearings.
We did, yes.
Thank you.
I think you're the first one who's actually addressed it, that bill.
Yeah, well, you know, I've learned in three sessions here that what's absolutely obvious to me isn't always obvious to everybody else. So I've learned to live with that.
May I join you in that?
House Bill 2653 is a rather simple bill. It simply proposes a 5-cent a gallon cigarette tax in 2008.
Gas tax.
I'm sorry, gas tax. Cigarette tax a different day.
Same room, representative, a different day.
I've never seen a tax I don't like. a gasoline tax in 2008. You need to check the staff summary just a little bit. Because it looks like, if you read the top of it, that it starts in 2013. It actually starts in 2008 with an increase in the excise tax from 24 cents to 29 cents, and then adds 5 cents per gallon every 5 years thereafter, a penny a year, but not collected that way. I sat on the Transportation Committee with Representative Beyer in 2003 and in the interim of the last session, and got more and more concerned about the state of our highways. And I love the OTIA packages, but they're basically freight mobility packages on I-5, 97, and 84. And to my district, which includes the Northwest Industrial District, that's very important. I don't at all want to trivialize the ability to move freight. It means jobs. It's all very important. But the basic infrastructure of the highways of our state is beginning to deteriorate. And it was very interesting hearing testimony about how the further behind you get in maintenance, the more costly it becomes to fix a mile of road. And it gets exponentially more costly when it gets to a certain point. And we're in danger of moving to that point in the curve where the ability to maintain the roads we have, let alone build new roads, will become so exponentially expensive that it'll eat up everything we have. This is a modest proposal, although any tax proposal isn't modest. That requires 3/5 vote. I understand that, but you know, I drive by this ARCA station here frequently, more than one time a day, and it'll move. The price of gas will move more than 5 cents a gallon one way or another in one day. And once you get to $3.40 a gallon 5 cents more or 5 cents less doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference. And it seems to me it is the right time. I had the opportunity in another context to study what happened the last time we proposed a gasoline tax increase. And it was a very interesting case study, and it got mixed up in the question of the relationship between the weight mileage tax on trucks and the gasoline tax on cars. And it was before we had a constitutional amendment that requires trucks to pay their fair share of the road, which we have now. And it's actually worked fairly well in the process of attributing the relative costs of the roads between trucks and cars. But AAA got all incensed and actually were able to get something like 185,000 signatures by mail in one mailing to refer the last gasoline tax, not because they opposed the gasoline tax, which they actually favored in the beginning, but because they opposed the change in the weight mileage tax on trucks. I mean, it seems to me that was what, I'm not sure what that was, 99 or something like that? Yeah, 99 to 2000, long time ago. It really is time to rethink this. A gasoline tax makes sense. So does a cigarette tax, but that's not open right now. Is that?
Thank you, Representative.
I'll throw in that pitch while we're at it. But this makes so much sense, and the roads are so desperate. And I put it in not because I necessarily thought that this particular bill would pass, but because I really wanted to make sure we had a conversation on how we fund our highways, how we fund the maintenance, how we fund the improvements, how we fund where we're moving. And while I support the other bill that's open right now, it seems to me that's a very modest piece and will only do things at the margin, and I think we have to get to the heart of it. There, we are at least $1 billion short per year in the money we need to run our highways, and we need to get serious about how we're going to get that money.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
We appreciate your testimony and your hard work on these bills and the hard work of the Transportation Committee. Craig Campbell, Bob Russell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA Oregon, Idaho. I want to thank Representative Greenlink for relaying the history lesson so that I don't have to. One of the strange things about this time around is you'll notice in a number of the meetings that we've had so far dealing with transportation taxation issues that both AAA and the Oregon Trucking Association have chosen to appear side by side, largely because historically in dealing with transportation taxes we found ourselves on one side or the other, and we decided enough was enough, so we were going to sit down together and make sure that didn't happen this time. With that, you for me to begin. Obviously, for a number of years, we've identified that we have a growing transportation funding problem and a need to address it, not only as the needs increase, but also as our current method of taxation isn't exactly the most efficient in the long run. That being said, we have some significant freight mobility issues. We have congestion issues. That's true, and I want to applaud the efforts to generate the Congestion Relief Act of 2007. With that, of course, there is also the need to remember that maintenance and preservation remains a critical element of whatever we do. However, the public is not likely to support taxes for something as sexy and as exciting as maintenance and preservation. So you have to develop a tax proposal that the public will look at and say, yeah, that makes sense. I know that this session, the discussion around transportation taxes started fairly late. And unfortunately, when you're dealing with something that hopefully will be acceptable to the public, but you also must realize there is a good likelihood historically that taxes on transportation will come before the public, you want to make sure you have done everything you can to make sure that when it gets before them, they understand why you've enacted it so that they can agree with you and the tax will pass with their approval. I will indicate that AAA has some specific stands on House Bill 3018. And I'll explain those to you, and then I'll stand aside and let other people speak. But one is we support the idea of the plate fee increase with the commensurate weight mile tax increase. And I'll make this statement not to flatter him, but just because it's true, is there's really almost no one in the state that I would rather have making the determination of what is cost responsible than Mazen Malik. He has had to sit through all the congestion study meetings that we have, and he understands it, and there are very few people in the state who can say that.
Yeah.
So that being said, we have a tremendous faith that whatever numbers he comes up with will reflect a cost-responsible system, and of course it's now constitutionally required. We do have concerns about what happens when you add the registration fee increase, and I understand there's also discussion about the possibility of adding gas taxes to this as well. And really that's a question of weight. The more you add to it, the more difficult it will be to get the required votes to get this through the session, and quite frankly we have a lot of work to do after the session is over to prepare for what will necessarily have to be a larger project coming forward in 2009. And I do want to indicate that AAA expects to be an active player in those discussions in preparing for the 2009 session and whatever transportation package is generated for that. Specifically, one other element, which to some extent is moot, is AAA does oppose the idea of taking away the requirement for a public vote when local government passes registration fee increase. The House's vote yesterday or the day before, made that somewhat irrelevant, but I figured since it is in the bill currently, I'd make that comment just for the record. So I'm very happy to answer any questions you may have, but other than that, I'll stop speaking.
Thank you. Mr. Russell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Association, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'll be try to be brief in light of the crowds we have in the room that like to talk as well.
I have plenty of people.
I think that there's one thing that everyone in the room would agree on, and that's the needs. Certainly from our point of view, it's our number one concern. The projections are that the volume of freight is going to double between now and 2025. Right now, the trucking industry is transporting about 72% of the tons of freight in the state, and by that time, we're projected to transport about 76% of the tons. So you're talking about more than twice as many trucks on our highways that are already congested and making it difficult to meet our schedules and provide the service that the Oregon economy is dependent on. There are a number of challenges that we face in sort of getting to yes on a transportation funding package. One of them is sort of the lack of inertia, at least that's the way I like to express it. It's very difficult to build projects in some locations in the state today. For example, in Representative Barnhart's district, last year there was a major project that they decided not to build. Seaside, a couple of years ago, there was a similar project. It's very difficult to get the commitment to actually expand the capacity of our highways. That has to be addressed. There's also, like with so many issues in this building, there's an urban-rural split. The needs of our rural communities in terms of transportation are very different than our urban communities. That also has to be addressed in anything that we put together. There's also sort of a lack of trust, confidence in government, and I'm not being critical of the Department of Transportation at all. I think that's just a general view of the public towards government today. So they look at the proposals that we come up with very suspiciously. Sort of an example of that that's relevant today. A couple of weeks ago in the Oregonian, they had that little stats section back in the back pages of the paper every Sunday. And a couple of weeks ago, it was on taxes. And one of the things they did was said, how many people favor a gas tax? And the statistic was 82% oppose a gas tax today. That is a real challenge to any transportation funding package that we're considering this session. From our perspective, to address these challenges, we need not only a plan to raise money, but we need a plan on how we're going to spend the money. So it's for that reason that we're here supporting the proposal that was developed by Senators Metzger and Starr because in fact that's what that proposal does. It develops a plan down to the specific project level, and that we can take and we can overcome the public's objection to tax increases, that we can build support so that we can be successful. You know, Representative Greenlick was talking about the last time a gas tax was on the ballot, and yes, there was a weight mile tax proposal that was part of that. I happened to be on the losing end of that one, and it went down 88-12. My industry does not want to be there again. We don't believe we have time to be there again. We want very much to be successful. So what we're advocating is that we need to do our homework, and then we need to come to you with a comprehensive proposal that not only deals with congestion, but certainly deals also with the maintenance and preservation questions, and something that we can that will pass muster at the ballot, because I suspect that that's where it's going to end up. And with that, I will stop and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions for this panel? It isn't clear to me from the way that the two of you have talked whether you think that we can produce something this session that will be useful and that will meet Mr. Russell's criteria for success. Could you comment on that comment?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that if the transportation community got behind the Metzger Star proposal, I believe we could be successful. I still hold out that hope. However, it is my opinion that anything more ambitious than that would be very difficult.
Thank you. Now I understand your point.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the most part, I would have to concur. 36 votes this late in the session on a tax vote of one that probably was not on the initial list of tax votes that were likely to come forward, the May forecast notwithstanding, is going to be a difficult haul. And so I can't speak to the way people will vote. I can speak to how much effort can be put into it. Is there a possibility? Yes, there's a possibility. Is it a good one? Probably not a very good one, which means that it will likely require that there be a very quick consolidation around a single plan, because what tends to happen when you don't have time to develop a single plan is you have a lot of people shopping a lot of different ideas. That creates confusion. And when you go to legislators, they don't really know what they're committing to one way or the other, and will default to no if they have the opportunity to do so. That's just my opinion, but that's where I would. That's how I'd answer your question.
Thank you very much. Mr. Russell talks to the issue of the plebiscite, and you talk, Mr. Campbell, to the issue of whether it can pass the out of the building or not. And I think both of those are important. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Randy Pape and Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, Chair Barr and Revenue Committee members. My name is Steve Clark with Randy Pape. I am co-chair of the Oregon Business Plan Initiative on Transportation. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today to discuss improved funding for the transportation systems that serve all of Oregon. And while much of the conversation has in the past 50 minutes is centered around the state system, we believe the system that serves our cities and counties as well as our state highways is exceedingly important. This is an issue that's essential to Oregon's economy and the quality of life that our citizens so highly regard and invest in. By way of backdrop, the Oregon Business Plan Initiative on Transportation and efforts within the Portland area by the Portland Business Alliance were created not for a lack of inertia, but a lack of understanding, both within the business community and the general public, between the relationship between Oregon's transportation system, Oregon's economy, and livability. The cost of congestion study in Portland raised the specter of that by showing that in the Portland area over the next 20 years, the cost of congestion would grow to reach a tune of $842 million annual cost per year. We were asked by the Oregon Transportation Commission and legislators to understand this issue statewide, and the Oregon Business Plan took on that responsibility, and you'll hear briefly a little bit more about that study in just a few minutes. As you've heard, Oregon's economy is highly transportation dependent. More than 400,000 Oregon jobs are transportation reliant or transportation dependent. Simply, that means one out of every five jobs requires or responds to the transportation system. When it works well, Oregon's economy works well. When it doesn't, Oregon's economy suffers. Oregon's transportation system connects all Oregonians and our entire state's economy together, rural and urban, valley and desert. Transportation systems also connect our state economy to the national economy and serve as a gateway to the global marketplace. And as you know, Oregon businesses are competing globally, and I have to tell you, the competition is fierce. As a recently completed statewide cost of congestion and travel delay study tells us, Oregon businesses are already feeling, and state citizens are already feeling, the impact of an adequately funded and increasingly poorly maintained transportation infrastructure. As a result, businesses throughout Oregon are incurring significant costs, mounting costs, and as a result, this is a result of missed shipments of deadlines due to congestion and travel delay. In response, they're acting. Businesses are adding more trucks and drivers to already congested roads. They're increasing their on-site inventory. They're building additional operation and shipping centers. Some Oregon businesses, Cisco Foods in Wilsonville and Roseburg Forest Products, are expanding operations outside of the state of Oregon and other parts of the nation to serve growing marketplaces because they cannot rely on Oregon's transportation system and its connection with other states. Firms such as Intel, Georgia-Pacific, and metal recyclers in Portland have changed their operations, their delivery routes, and their production schedules several times to contend with congestion, road conditions, and highway capacities. All of this is having an impact on Oregon's economy and on Oregon's livability. It's a negative impact. The ability of our state to compete today and in the future is being greatly challenged, and it is being diminished by not only the growing demand on the Oregon transportation system, freight and population growth, but also to our inadequate transportation infrastructure and the funds we have available. We are falling behind other states. States such as Washington, California, and Idaho are already stepping up to their transportation challenge and to the economic opportunity and the livability that their citizens demand. They're doing it in a big way with major investments. We certainly recognize the talk of increased funding for transportation is difficult. No one wants to pay more taxes, certainly not in a time where general fund revenue has grown. But in fact, Oregon citizens and Oregon businesses are already paying more. They're paying much more. They're paying it with increased inventory costs, freight cost differentials, and loss of access to markets. We're paying with increased gas usage due to travel delays. We're paying with the additional highway wear and tear caused by more and more trucks and cars on roads that were built to serve systems and requirements demand that was much less years ago. We are paying every day with loss of livability and highway safety. How much is this costing the state of Oregon? The recent statewide cost of travel delay and congestion tells us, in comparison with Portland, by the year 2025, the cost to the Oregon economy and our citizens will grow to cost the state of Oregon annually $1.7 billion each year, as well as 16,000 jobs. Nothing comes at a price. I mean, doing nothing comes at a price. Doing nothing will cost Oregon in many ways. Because we are an income tax-based state, the consequence of not sustainably and significantly investing in Oregon's entire system, both its state highways, its local cities and county highways, will cost the state and its economy. And it's because we are a state that's based on the income tax, it will cost our ability to serve K-12 education, higher education, human services, and other programs that our citizens depend upon. Yes, the business community has galvanized because, frankly, no one else was galvanized around this issue back in the fall. But let me offer something to you today, and let me offer it as clearly as I possibly can. Yes, we are passionate. Yes, we are highly motivated. But please understand, we are equally committed to work in partnership with this committee, the entire Oregon legislature, and all stakeholders to craft a transportation funding package that is achievable this session and begins to address the critical shortfall of resources to adequately maintain and modernize our system. Oregon and its transportation system is behind. We must begin to act now. We are acutely aware of the difficulty in identifying solutions within a legislative process, and to that we ask you to consider our respectful request. Chair Barnhart, we ask that you create a working group to develop a transportation investment approach that can gain support in this session among legislators and all stakeholders. Given the short time frame, this group should be highly focused and produce scenarios that can be considered by the respective legislative caucuses. We respectfully request that you create this work group and also appoint a revenue committee member from each party to facilitate these discussions within the working group on proposals that can be developed and brought back to both this committee and the respective caucuses. In closing, let me say we remain committed to work with you and all stakeholders. We look forward to participating with you to continue to educate Oregons, to find a solution, and to begin to help moving Oregon forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pepe.
Thank you.
Great to see you again.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. It's a pleasure to be here and committee members. I'm Randy Pepe, president of the Pepe Group based in Eugene, Oregon, and also a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission, as well as a member of the Oregon Business Council, which is a part of the Oregon Business Plan. So I have a great deal to say this afternoon. However, I recognize that there are a lot of people who are here to testify as well, and it's Friday afternoon. It's a wonderful day outside, and there are other things beginning to creep into our minds at this time of the week. But let me address several things. One, having been a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission that you all have graciously allowed me to do for the last 6 years has maybe in the academic world allowed me to study for a master's level of degree in transportation. Chair Foster, who will speak later, has gone far beyond that and probably would be at the doctorate level in terms of issues within the state transportation system and broader in terms of the federal program. First of all, let me focus our attention on the Oregon Transportation Plan that I'm holding up, and this you all have seen as the executive summary. There is a far larger study behind that. I would be happy to read that into the record, but I'm assuming that you all would rather read that at your own opportunity. But I do want to call your attention to the fact that the study has been done. This was adopted by the Transportation Plan, or by the Transportation Committee at our fall meeting. It was a long, lengthy study, including many stakeholders in the transportation, from the vehicle users to truck, freight, everything that we could generate to create this this new updated plan. This plan contains a great deal of information on all modes, but it, in terms of transportation, it suggests that we have a deficiency of about $1.4 billion annually. Around $800 million of that would be directed to the highway program, of which we're speaking to you this afternoon. The Business Coalition has come together in a significant group that heretofore has maybe been a little bit more fragmented, but nonetheless interested in moving products, goods, and services throughout the state and adjoining region, as well as a number of people who use the transportation system for schools, for recreation, and other opportunities within the state. I want to call your attention, and I think you'll hear more about the program from the cities, as well as the county needs assessment and the deficiencies that they're running as part of the program. I think you'll also hear some testimony relative to the timber or secure rural school funding issue. Pardon my speech impediment. I am a adult with braces on. I didn't learn well the first time of year, so first time around when I was in my teens and had braces, so they got to do it again. But I apologize if you have any questions when I speak. Why, please let me know. My wife is often saying, "What? You know, say that again," kind of thing. So, as we think about several things the projects of statewide importance in the state, I think, is really important. And that I was on the commission when that was created, and it has, as Representative Berger said, been somewhat stagnant. Although we are moving that program forward in the Highway 20 project, significant project, very costly project. That project will probably, by itself, without the Philomath couplet, is in the neighborhood of $160 million, to give you the size of magnitude. Newburgh-Dundee, which is one of the other projects, is now is in excess of $600 million. The Sunrise Corridor could be significantly beyond that. So the issue here is, how do we find the funding to be able to deal with these aspects? And we believe that we have to do something relative to increasing the funding now. And as I've mentioned, the studies, if you have a chance to review those, are all already in. I'm not suggesting, as a good business person, that we don't continue to study. We obviously need to continue to study and keep things updated. But the fact we know, you know, and the public knows what is out there and the problems. It's a matter of how we get around those problems and how we deal with those. Let me, in that spirit, turn your attention to the folder or the pamphlet that I think was handed out to you, talking about the transportation competitiveness. This is the outline that the Business Coalition used to put together, which is now contained in the amendment to House Bill 3018-A7 that you all referred to earlier. And I would like to draw your attention to the second page of that program. It is headlined Business Coalition Proposal, and it kind of outlines in a broad sense what the business folks have suggested that we should be considering now in terms of transportation funding. Let's start at the middle part of the page where it says notes. If you're with me, there's a line across the page and it says notes. And you'll see that the proposal that we have suggested, we introduced at the Oregon Business Summit in January, and were asked by President of the Senate Courtney to bring a program before the legislature, and that's exactly what we are doing, would suggest that we would like to raise $350 million. Now, that $350 million, according to the current revenue process, would be split between the state 50%, counties 30%, and cities 20%. And you can see how that breaks down, so that the state would have $175 million, cities and counties, $175 million going to the counties and $70 million to the cities. Pardon me. You'll see under item number two where the state is suggested, and we as the Transportation Commission, as well as the staff of ODOT, are suggesting the significant categories of where the state's portion would be spent. And you'll see that 175 broken down into four categories. Preservation and maintenance is extremely critical to continue to keep the system upgraded and working properly. Second bullet point, make the system work better. That's a broad terminology for things like safety, intelligent transportation systems, those kinds of things that help us move traffic and relieve congestion. Third item is freight mobility. We think that the package needs to be focused on addressing improved freight mobility. And the last item, congestion relief. Then if you look at point number three, that talks about addressing the silos that exist between state and federal, city and county, and trying to integrate how those different organizations can come together and focus their financial resources on specific given projects. And we have discussed that in length with cities and counties. We think that there's a good deal of support for that, and it would also allow them to use that in their matching funds, which oftentimes the federal government and the state requires for various projects. So that's a real important element. The fourth item is the state and local governments would, in the would report to the legislature. We think we ought to be accountable to you all for where this money is being spent and how it's being spent. And we are pleased to come back, and in fact, we urge you to continue to have that part of as a part of the program going forward. And the fifth item addresses bonding. You all have done an outstanding job of setting the transportation program in this state by passing OTIAs 1, 2, and 3. Certainly the Connect Oregon projects that are off-highway projects are extremely well-received. And we believe that bonding has a place. However, we're concerned that if we get too far extended with bonding programs, we're mortgaging the future, in essence, and so that's our concern. But this would tell you that we, under the plan that is being proposed, you could do a one-time $300 million bonding project, still stay within appropriate funding levels, still meet the state's credit standards that are very important to the rates that we pay. Item number five addresses, that is the bonding aspect, and I would then say that we again want to be sure that we're thinking about the bonding program and that funding for bonding, that if we do put forward a bonding proposal, that the appropriate revenues are generated to support those bonds out of the starting gate. So that is real important to us as well. So again, in terms of where we are, we believe that we need to move quickly and rapidly forward. We believe that the public will respond positively. We can look to our neighbors to the north and south and see that significant transportation funding has, in fact, moved forward in their states. And we believe that Oregonians are also ready to do that based on what you all have put together and the department, ODOT, has done in OTIAs 1, 2, and 3. So with that and the great comments that my colleague began the conversation with, we're pleased to receive any questions that you all might have.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, thank you for your hard work, and I know the Oregon Business Plan and the Oregon Business Council has been concentrated and done some wonderful work on behalf of the state and for us. I deeply appreciate it. Mr. Clark, you mentioned that we need to be moving forward with a plan, and you suggested that members of this committee be part of it. Was your suggestion based on something going forward, like from today to the end of this session, or are you looking to the possibility of the 08 session or the next session? What's your vision for that?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Berger, we would like to have two elements. We would ask the chair, ask the committee to appoint a work group that would work in this session to do so immediately, to consider the recommendations offered by Senator Starr and Senator Metzger, as well as by Representatives Hunt. And we think that it's, and Greenlick, we think it's exceedingly important that we start the recovery process now in this session to as great an extent and as pragmatic and political extent as possible. We also believe that the legislature, the business community, and all stakeholders, including Oregonians, when we in the business community have been able to connect the economy and Oregonians together, we do great things. We do tremendous things. It isn't just the economy, stupid. It's the economy, livability, and education. It's time we do that. We would like to use the interim to continue from this step, step one in 07, to build forward, to imagine a transportation system that is sustainable and significantly and consistently invested in. We want to do it now, and we want to do it with you in the interim.
Thank you, Representative
Berger. Further comment, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. I'm really concerned that this is getting too late in the session for this kind of a major effort. I was, involved in the last two sessions on this committee and saw transportation package moved forward. these aren't easy things. I think you heard the testimony before you. They're not easy for the public, and they're not easy in here. And it's because they're not easy for the public that they're not easy in here. There's a connection there. And you know, it usually takes a number of newspaper articles and pretty graphic pictures. Everyone knows the congestion in their neighborhood, but they don't know its significance for freight. They don't know it. And I'm pretty concerned that while we're trying to get a package that would be well supported, that our timeline is pretty short for that. And I just wanted to kind of interject that, not to diminish the work that's been done. It's been tremendous, but I am concerned about the headline. Well, legislature springs gas tax, or legislature springs fee increase on the poor unsuspecting public. That does concern me a lot, because it can undermine the work that's been done so far.
May I respond, Chair Barnhart and Representative Berger, on a couple of items? Yes, we understand the challenge. We don't think it will be any easier down the road someplace. We need to meet this head on. As I mentioned, the studies have been done. They've been out in the public's hands for a number of months and years. The county's issues are pretty desperate at this point. I think you all are very aware of that. We in the business plan have offered and are moving forward with an outreach program that would be a public relations education program, if you will. In fact, we interviewed firms this morning in hopes of selecting a firm soon to do that outreach and education program. If you refer to the business coalition plan, we talked about several elements in funding over some years. We think it's extremely, I'll emphasize that, extremely important that we get started now. As difficult and challenging as it may be, we're ready to work with this group. We're ready to move forward and help get that passed, help get the public outreach, which is already going. I think you'll hear some of that testimony later. But you see the out years with additional funding, and we, as Mr. Clark indicated, our plan is intended to be flexible. It is lays a plan on the table, but if we could get together with a work group that we could pull together with your leadership, we believe that this is doable, that it can be done, and the public will support it. And I think we have neighboring states that we can look to that would be a fine example that say, you know, the voters are willing to pay for things where they perceive that they're receiving value.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you
very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Lynn Lundquist, Ann Gardner, and did you have a third?
Chair, Ann Gardner's not here.
Oh, okay. All right. That was
somebody else that came on.
Well, okay. Let's do Art Schlack, B.J. Smith. Please go ahead while they're coming up.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
If we have a number of county people that signed up when I did, and if it's possible that we could come up, Commissioner Lewis and Dennis Mulvihill with me, and then with B.J. Cam Gilmore. I don't think it's signed up, but he's also from Clackamas County.
Okay. We'll hear from Mr. Lundquist, and then we'll do the panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Barnhart. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I'll try to keep this very brief because a lot of people out here wanted to talk. I think we've heard it already. There's a great need. I'd like to just give a different perspective, an additional perspective a little bit. I, as you know, come from Central Oregon, and we all know about the choke points, the congestion here in the urban area, but rural Oregon also has issues. It just so happens that in Crook County, the fastest growing county in the state, there's a couple of resorts going in that literally build a new Prineville on an existing roads that were designed for 100 years ago, where we should go. Just throw that out. That's an example, I think, of we need to keep the perspective of the whole state as as we look at this. Oregon Business Association certainly appreciates the hard work that the business plan has brought forth. Particularly, I want to mention Mr. Pat Pei. He has a great vision, a great passion, and what I think that brings is it does at least it brings our sights up higher, and I think that's good. We need to think about that, and so I appreciate all the work that they've done on that. This session that we see before us, and Representative Berger was talking about the short timeline. Having been in this process myself, I'm very committed to success, and I think we need to be careful as we go through that process that success is the outcome rather than failure, and then we are forestalled for future activities. I agree with perhaps the work group can at least build, and if we aren't successful at that level, at least we haven't gone to the public yet, so we have not created a condition whereby it precludes us from being unsuccessful down the road. So I think that's all very positive. I would happen to be on the county, Cook County Court as well, and, you know, as a county, and I'm sure you'll hear some of this, but the rural counties from where I come from, we have just gone through five of the counties. You're all aware of that. Very, very tough situations that we're not talking about roads, we're talking about safety. And yet they turned that down very, very strongly. So I think that just should give us a sense
if
of
you're
reality.
You're referring to the May election.
To the May election, yes. So I just think that brings reality to us. We need to have a strategy, and that's what I just simply like to leave it with. I hope that this committee, working with the business plan, with others, we can develop a strategy. If it's not for now, let's find something that truly does bring a success in 09. I happen to have voted three times on a transportation package that we were unsuccessful a number of years ago. I remember that. I remember we didn't have a very good strategy at the time, and I don't want to be a part of that. So I just encourage you to go down that route. I believe that OTEA 1, 2, and 3 were successful because there was a buzz, there was an incentive to go forward, but an enthusiasm to go forward by the community. So I just quit by saying that, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You have heavy lifting ahead of you.
Thank you very much, Lynn. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions for Lynn? Thank you. Art, why don't you call your panelists? I'm not sure I got all the names, so I'll let you call the next panel as well.
Eventually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Art Slack, and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and with me here is Commissioner Leslie Lewis from Yamhill County and Dennis Mulvihill from Washington County at this point. And Mr. Chair, the next panel will be B.J. Smith and Cam Gilmore. They both represent Clackamas County at this point.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Association of Oregon Counties and the 36 counties of the state have long recognized the need to increase transportation funding to support the integrated system of state highways, county roads, and city streets. To that end, Mr. Chair, after last session where we did not see much in the way of transportation to help the surface road systems in the state, the Association of Oregon County set forth an effort in 2006 to develop a report dealing with county road needs. And I believe each one of you maybe have seen that before, but I brought copies of that report here today. That report goes into some detail to looking at the needs of Oregon's counties dealing with a number of different topics, maintenance and preservation, congestion, safety, etc. Just briefly, members of the committee, the counties have identified a need of $433 million annually for at least the next 5-6 years when we looked at this report. Now, the reference was made to secure rural schools earlier, and then you can add another $90 to $95 million annually because that's what the counties that receive funds from secure rural schools are losing, have lost at this point, unless there is something that the federal government does in terms of continuing that program either on a one-year basis or otherwise. There was a question that Representative Berger had about the impact of inflation and also what happens when you don't maintain or preserve the existing system. I would just call your attention to pages 8 and 20 of the report that has information about the increased cost in diesel and asphalt and what has happened to those things over the last few years. We are not in anywhere, shape or form, keeping up just with inflation, let alone being able to deal with some of the other issues that we've talked about. With regard to the need to increase funding, AOC earlier this year took a position to support increases in the gas tax, vehicle registration, the idea or the concept of indexing the gas tax, and first-time title as sources of revenue that the association would support should the legislature look at moving forward with a transportation package this session. So I want you to be aware of those. Certainly you're looking in the two bills that you have before you today, registration fee increases and also gas tax increases. So generally we are in support of those. The new revenue, Mr. Chair, we support and would ask this committee to ensure that the distribution of any new revenue is done on the basis of 50-30-20. That has not always been the case in, shall we say, OTIA 1 and 2. We got very close in OTIA 3. But I think at this point, when you look at the needs of cities and counties and the state, that the distribution of those funds in a 50-30-20 manner is the most equitable, and it's the only way that we can ensure that the integrated system will continue to be operated in the best response to the needs of the citizens and also the needs of the economy at this point. We are very much appreciative of the work that's been done by the legislature to date and the business community. We continue to believe that there is a need for a multi-session strategy with regard to transportation. We do not believe that you can take one bite of the apple and really meet that need. We have to have a strategy. Strategy should start today, I mean in this session, so that we can move forward to meet these needs at this point. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd conclude and turn to Commissioner Lewis to make additional comments.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm one of the three county commissioners in Yamhill County, and it's a pleasure to be here today. And I want to thank you very much for holding this hearing this afternoon. I'm sure you folks are interested in getting home to your families this weekend, and so appreciate the late afternoon hearing. I want to talk to you today about funding for projects of statewide significance, in particular the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. It may be poorly named the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. That's actually where the bottleneck is in Newburgh and Dundee, but it's a regional problem that stretches all the way from the Portland metropolitan area to the Oregon coast. We are in between people, the million plus people who live in the Portland metropolitan area, many of whom want to get to the Oregon coast or want to get to the number one tourist attraction in the state, which continues to be the Spirit Mountain Casino. We also in Yamhill County have a number of things that people want to get to in Yamhill County. The Evergreen Aviation Museum is becoming quite world famous with the Spruce Goose and the soon-to-be Space Museum and the IMAX Theater. And, of course, we are home to, at last count, I saw 134 wineries. We are definitely, I would like to say we're the wine capital of Oregon, but other areas might disagree with me. So we have all these people who want to get to Yamhill County and want to get through Yamhill County, and they can't because of the bottleneck in Newburgh and Dundee. We have, to give you an example, one freight truck every 10 seconds going through the historic part of Newburgh, and it's one of the oldest cities in Oregon. A few years ago, and I'm not sure what the statistics are today, the volume of traffic in Dundee, which is a two-lane section of highway, it's three lanes, it's got a center turn lane, but it's basically two travel lanes. The volume of traffic in Dundee was equal to the volume of traffic on I-5 between Albany and Eugene. So we clearly have a major problem. We also have a number of the top 10 traffic accident sites, of course, along this stretch of highway. And we've identified the solution, and that's the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. You heard Commissioner Pape talk about the cost of that. I only thought it was $494 million, so it's gone up. But we are committed to ways that we can phase this project, ways that we can do it in over time. And just as Mr. Schlack said, there's a need in the legislature to have a multi-session approach, and there's a need for projects of statewide significance to have a multi-year funding plan. We're realistic. We know you can't fund something this large all in one bite, and then you're going to have to take nibbles at it. Just to give you a little a sense of where our project is at, we have gone through what's called a location environmental impact statement. We have received a record decision from the Federal Highway Administration on the route of our project. It's an 11-mile project. We are also identified by the Oregon Transportation Commission as an approved facility plan. We have all of the approvals at the local level. The county commissioners have adopted this in our TSP. The cities of Newburgh, Dundee, and Dayton have also adopted this. We've been through LUBA challenges and Court of Appeals challenges and won all of those. We were 100% affirmed at LUBA. That almost never happens if you know anything about land use in the state of Oregon. We are one of the three projects that the OTC is looking at for public-private partnerships. This project, along with the I-5 to 99 connector, brought the concept of tolling to the state of Oregon during the 1995 session. We introduced that bill. I helped co-carry that bill on the floor of the House. And so we're very committed to having creative, innovative, alternative forms of funding for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. With that, I think I'll just say there is an urgency. One estimate is the cost of our project goes up $2 million a month. I'm not sure that that's accurate, but that's one of the consulting firms said that it's going up that much. Right-of-way costs are going up, and, of course, the costs of construction are going up. So there is a sense of urgency about doing something. We do have some money for right-of-way acquisition through a federal earmark, and we are actively purchasing right-of-way at this time. And we are finishing up what's called a design environmental impact statement, and that should be done in 2008, and our project will be on the shelf, ready to go, but with not enough funding to move it forward. So I would encourage the legislature to look at how we can not only address the maintenance and preservation needs at the city, county, and state level, but also look at how we move ahead major modernization projects that have the freight mobility and the need for relieving congestion. So I thank you for your time, and I would take any questions. And I have, I think they've passed around a lot of the testimony. There's lists of bypass supporters, and then this is a packet of testimony. We didn't have time to bring a lot of people here today. We brought a dozen people to the Senate Transportation Committee and about a dozen to the House Transportation Committee, and I have a packet of their testimony. I will hand it out when I get up from here. It was for those other committees, but I think it speaks to the need for projects of statewide significance and for Newburgh-Dundee specifically. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And before we go any further, I would let you know that we have 14 people to hear from and about 15 minutes. So I'd ask everyone to be extremely brief make your main points, and then allow the next person to testify. And I appreciate that, and I apologize for having to limit it, but we have a limited amount of time today. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Dennis Mulva Hill from Washington County. So I've just been given permission to be terse. I will do so.
Affirmative.
I probably should have said that some time ago, but I appreciate it. And I'm not trying to pick on you.
This will work. So I can just sort of cut to the things I'd like to leave you with. I wasn't going to say anything, but there's a few things that I'd like to add to this conversation here that's gone on today. I think that, you know, we've got 14 years of no funding for local roads for their capacity and maintenance, and it's costing all Oregonians money. I mean, we've proven it. It's there. And I think we need to keep that in mind. And it's not too late if we start now. So I would encourage you to exercise some pragmatic boldness. I think we heard the politics laid out today, but it doesn't mean you can't be bold, just need to be pragmatic about it, and we can move something. I don't hear anybody arguing that we don't need to raise billions of dollars. We're quibbling over. So how fast and some sources and, you know, how long is it going to take us to get there? I would suggest it's going to take about as many years to build ourselves out of this as it took us to get us into this space. So, and I'll guarantee I won't be around. I'll be off someplace else. Second point, in the absence of a signal from the legislature that there's a campaign that's being started to reinvest in Oregon's transportation system, you're going to continue to see a balkanization at the local level. They're going to go raise monies locally, and that is really inefficient. It isn't coordinated. You don't raise as much money locally, and it will further fracture what's going on. The experience in Washington County from a local road improvement method, the MSTIP, which is basically raising property taxes and then bonding them, what we found from that is that if you identify projects, the public will support tax increases if they know that that's what the money's being spent for, and I would suggest that you apply that to what you do when you're working on the funding packages that come out of, hopefully, this legislative session. The last point I'd make on highways of statewide significance is that it's a good model, and those projects that were identified in the first place, I think you'll find, were put there for good reason. Now, doesn't mean they ought not to be reexamined, because some of them maybe didn't garner the or maintain the support you need at the local level to keep them moving along. But you'll also find, like what you just heard from Yamhill County, Washington County, is that we've spent many years. We've got $10 million of federal funding to buy right-of-way. We've spent $8 million already, and we've got multiple jurisdictions working on it. But if we don't have money at the other end for about a $400 million project, you know, it's going to sit there as the, I was going to say Representative Lewis, I was here then too. It'll sit on the shelf. So with that, I will end. That's as terse as I can get with the points I want to make.
And I appreciate that, and I think you've done a great job. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. What? Call your next panel.
And I forgot to mention we have 9,100 petition signatures that we've collected over the years from people. So that was that's in the orange folder. I was going to mention that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am B.J. Smith. I'm the Public and Government Relations Director for Clackamas County, and I have with me Cam Gilmore, who is the Director of our Transportation and Development Department. And I'll try to be, first of all, I'll start with the speakers before us say ditto, ditto, ditto. I agree with statements that Art, Commissioner Lewis, and Dennis presented to you, and I believe our county commission does. One, and trying to just cut to our remaining remarks, there is an incredible amount of energy right now that is occurring in Clackamas County among our business communities, not just one community. And they are working with us in a, I think, tighter formation than we have ever seen before to try to get a handle on a transportation problem or challenge that is almost moving beyond our control. It's both maintenance and preservation and operations because of the secure rural schools, but it's also growth-related because of the demands that are coming to Clackamas County. And I think in front of you, we want to be very pragmatic. It is important that there be a responsible and passable package developed. There are 2 points in the framework that's before you that I believe Commissioner Lewis mentioned. One is that you have the opportunity to make a decision for today, and the second part is that you have the opportunity to make progressive decisions for strategies for tomorrow. And we really do encourage you to look at the strategic deficiencies, I think, in the way we've been thinking about transportation. There are deficiencies there. It doesn't link well with our land use system. We have been dormant for many years in terms of additional transportation investments. We are not seeing it and regarding it as the type of utility system that basically needs constant care and maintenance. With those two remarks, we do have a highway project of statewide significance, and I would we have provided a great deal of information for you to take a close look at that. And I would I'm going to give you my concluding remarks, and that's that there are $60 million that have already that's already been committed and invested to the Sunrise Corridor system. And that is the major interface between the Clackamas County 205 area going into central and eastern Oregon. This is a tremendous, lifeline in terms of economic and freight movement that benefits far more than just the stewardship of our little county. But $60 million has progressed that project so far. We are talking about $500 million or more. But we are also talking about taking and looking at that project in what we call, I have a commissioner that calls it bite-sized chunks, which is segmenting, phasing, and doing what we can do to make certain that we acquire property early before that property is completely beyond our financial capacity, and that we build segments that make certain that we can retain the industrial base that is already in Clackamas County, and then basically build out. I think it's a unique project, and I'd ask Director Gilmore to just talk to you a little bit more about that.
Thank you. Director Gilmore.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for some time today. Cam Gilmore, Director of Clackamas County's Department of Transportation and Development. BJ covered most of what I had to say. I wanted to just add a couple of points to it. Previously, we've given you material that you again have in hand that gives you a great deal of background on a project of statewide significance, the Sunrise Corridor. Importantly, we've developed this project to date, recommencing. It first commenced in 1988 when it was one of 15 routes on the Access Oregon Highway System. It stalled out in 1998, as I testified previously, and it got back online in 2002. Like the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, the Sunrise Corridor will have passed all of the federal and state requirements leading to finishing right-of-way acquisition next year. We will be in a position to commence a phase of construction, whether it's local roads connecting that are part of the Sunrise system or whether it's a phase of the Sunrise project itself as early as 2010, perhaps late 2009. That's because of a $20 million share federal, state, and local government, Clackamas County, shares that have produced $60 million, half of which has been spent to date, leaving $30 million to bring the project to the point of readiness for some phase of construction. Please know that highways of statewide significance are not a term of policy. Actually, they're a term of law. In 1985, when the State Modernization Program was created by the Oregon Legislature, that terminology, I think it's ORS 366502, was explained in some detail. the Sunrise Corridor meets all of the criteria set forth in the statute. It's a freight route. It's a route that has extreme importance to economic development, job retention, and creation. And we think we're just about ready to go.
Thank you very
much. With your help.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Very much.
Fred Warner, Commissioner Sam Adams. Gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm, for the record, Fred Warner, Jr., Chairman of the Baker County Board of Commissioners.
Welcome.
I'm either an idiot or totally committed because I'm going to drive 13 hours to spend 1 minute talking to you about the importance of transportation issues to Baker County and a multitude of other eastern Oregon and possibly southern and coastal counties. My ranch that I was born and lived on was won in a poker game in 1866, and I believe there were tracks, and I would hate to be the county commissioner that took our road systems back to what they were in 1866, and that's really what the loss of PL 106-393 funding is going to mean to many of the Eastern Oregon counties. We have 700 miles of gravel roads, and we're used to driving on gravel roads, and those roads are going to go to dirt roads in the future if we as a state and a nation don't take a really hard look at what's going on. I have a statement that you guys have. I'm not going to repeat it, and I know you're pressed for time. It's a really complex system. There are a lot of inequities, and there's some political realities that are very hard to maneuver around. But I know Baker County wants to be part of this process. We want to work with the Business Council and all of you on solutions, and we're there to help.
Thank you. You know, there's no better way to demonstrate your commitment than that 13-hour drive, and we appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Adams. I'm a commissioner in the city of Portland. I'm also a graduate of South Eugene High School.
That's always good to know. Thank you.
I don't have much time, so I got a curry favor quick. I'm here not just speaking as a transportation commissioner for the city of Portland, but as the city of Portland is a member of the Oregon League of Cities, 242 cities across Oregon. 70% of Oregon's population lives in incorporated cities now, and I think passed out to your chairs was the good book that they put together, and to try to offer you some additional benefit. The city of Portland, which I'll talk about in a minute, has, like all other cities across Oregon, significant maintenance needs, safety needs, and different cities have different levels of congestion needs. In the city of Baker City on page 18, you will see that in terms of Resort, Birch, Walnut, Reservoir Ward Road, and B Street, they have nearly about $1.2 million in street improvements in Baker City that they do not have the resources for. As you know, cities across Oregon are dependent in large part on the decisions that you make about the gas tax. A lot of Oregonians don't know that, but it's part of the reason why we haven't had an increase in a long time. We've seen a 70% erosion in our buying power since there was an increase in the gas tax. Baker City, I talked about, Eugene, Willamette Street, and West 18th Avenue, $4.6 million need in a rebuild. John Day, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, total reconstruction at a cost of $2.5 million. Corvallis, Walnut Boulevard, Highland Drive, they have a list of about 6-7 projects that they need to do, no money for. $2.4 million, and you all use the streets to get to this building today. Commercial Union and many other streets downtown here in Salem have a backlog of just maintenance of $8 million. In addition to maintenance, though, and the congestion number that you heard from Steve Clark, I also want to highlight the fact that when a street is out of date, most of the streets in cities in Oregon were not built to handle the car congestion, the pedestrians, the bikes that now use that right away. In addition addition to transit, that those streets are very, very unsafe all across Oregon. Just in Portland alone, the negative cost to our economy based on National Transportation Safety Board statistics is $450 million a year. If you ask in terms of wanting to know where this money goes, which I think is a fair question, I can pretty confidently speak for most of the 242 cities in the Oregon League of Cities that if you ask us for the list of the most congested, the most deteriorated, and the most critical streets that are deteriorated, and you ask us for the most dangerous streets and what we would do to improve upon those, we can get you that list in a week. I thank you for your time today and for your consideration of this issue. I urge you to consider the support for HB 2653 and 3018. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate your testimony very much, and thanks for coming all that way. Laura Lockwood McCall. And we will conclude then with Matt Garrett and Stuart Foster. And I apologize if you didn't get heard today. We simply ran out of time. Please.
Thank you, Chair. Laura Lockwood McCall from the Office of State Treasurer's Office. I have a minor observation for your consideration with the different versions of the bill, 3018. In the enrolled bill, which is the A version, there is a 10-year cap on the term of the bonds that is not part of the A-7 amendments. And as you decide going forward, if this bill were to go forward, I would suggest that putting a 10-year cap, I understand the desire to keep it short term, but there are already outstanding over $1 billion of existing ODOT bonds. And you have to think about that in terms of issuing those bonds as well as the bonds that are outstanding. If you do a short term bond, sort of like if you do a short term mortgage, your annual debt service is a bit higher. There are coverage requirements on our indenture, so if you don't make sure that your revenues grow by that coverage factor, in essence, you reduce the coverage for all the existing bondholders and future bondholders. So I think if you go forward, it'd be nice to look at the pros and cons of putting a term cap versus leaving it more flexible for the Treasurer's Office and ODOT so that we can blend both existing bonds and new bonds in a way that results in the most cost-effective borrowing. If we don't increase revenues enough to cover that coverage, in essence, we'll dilute coverage, and that could affect the credit ratings and ultimately the interest cost. So more flexibility rather than less, obviously. There's public policy reasons to keep the debt short. But I can assure you, even with the existing debt, which is 25 years in length for the bonds we sold to date, the long-term borrowing cost thus far has been 4.5%. So it's a very reasonable interest rate, and we would just ask for maximum flexibility.
Thank you very much. That's a short and useful message. Mr. Garrett, Mr. Foster. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I will be very brief. I think the chorus of the needs far outstripping the revenues that were brought to you by your colleagues, by the business community, and by our local government partners would indicate and suggest that this has been a robust conversation about transportation needs and a conversation that needs to continue and continue now. I would speak to both bills knowing that the department truly appreciates any vehicle that allows more funding to be invested in transportation infrastructure. So with that, I'll defer to Dr. Foster.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I hope that none of my professors at the University of Oregon hear or read this transcript because it could be a fatal shock to them. Thank you. I mean, we've heard a lot about the crisis in our road system, our highway system, and that's what we're talking about here is the highway system. From my perspective, the need is immediate. We've got gridlock in Portland and in the other metropolitan areas. We've got explosive growth in central and southern Oregon. You've heard the rural counties talk about the crisis they're in and the cities that they're in regard to the funding of roads and the maintaining of roads in their communities. I think you may know, and if you don't, you should, that the population in the Portland metro area is projected to grow by 1 million in the next 20 years. And you heard Mr. Russell point out that truck traffic is going to double within the next 15 years. And if you drive up and down the interstate like I do, that's a lot of traffic on that interstate, a lot of freight traffic, and it's critical to the economy of our state. We've had a department that's had no increase in the gas tax since 1993. In the meantime, you have very generously and appropriately funded the OTA 1, 2, and 3 improvements, which has doubled our construction program, which we are delivering at a reduced FTE of 123. So we've doubled that construction program, and we're delivering that, and we've reduced the FTE. We have worked extremely hard, and this agency has worked extremely hard over the last 10 years to create efficiencies and to get lean and operate like a business. And I think we are, there's always room for improvement, but I think we have made huge strides, and I think we are an efficient agency. And I think that our expectations of our folks are very high, and they're living up to those expectations. I'm proud to be on the commission and to help lead this agency. It is outstanding. And by the way, the increase in our budget is largely attributable to OTIA 3, the bridge program, the deficient bridge program, and Connect Oregon. That's why there's additional increases in our budget, so that we can deliver those programs. Now, you've heard today, and we have heard, the need to produce a list. We need to have a list of projects that so we know what's going to be built if we fund the transportation program. And so I went to our department and said, we need to produce that list. Senator Metzger said, we need to do it within 2 years. I said, we need to do it within a month, because I know that these projects have been vetted by the area commissions and transportation. They have been vetted by management, and they have been vetted by the Freight Advisory Committee. We know what the projects are, and we know the projects out there far exceed the dollars that the business coalition is proposing far exceed the $350 million. But what we're giving you today is a list of the projects, and it's a list out of which we would select. We would use these funds to deliver projects. That's it. Thanks. Now, there's a typo on the front page, second paragraph. I told you we've done a lot of work in the past. This is a refinement of that. It does refer to rail and public transit projects. This list does not have any rail or public transit projects on it, because that isn't what's here. The second page of it gives you a summary of what we would propose to, what we could do with this additional funding. And then the third page, which is page 1 of 15, shows the investment opportunities. And the first part of it is to show the freight mobility and congestion relief projects that we could select from. And if we had $350 million, we could build four or five of those projects a year. And you'll see that at the top of each page there is, of each category, there is a summary that tells you what we could do with this funding. We give you the projects, and we tell you what we could do with this funding. So here's the list. There's a list that isn't going to be a surprise to anybody, because it's been vetted. It has the support of the freight community. It has support of our various area commissions on transportation. And it's not an exclusive list. I think one of the things we have to do is we have to build a certain degree of flexibility into this also. Times change, and over the time that you'd implement something like this, there could be changes. it's been suggested that these freight projects ought to be the priority ought to be there ought to be some assurance that that there's public involvement in the prioritization of freight projects. We're very comfortable with using a system that we use in OTIA 3, which was very successful, where we had them vetted by the freight community, the freight advisory committee in that situation before they came to our commission. We are comfortable with that. So we think that there's and my take on it was that the freight community was very comfortable with what happened in OTIA 3 on the freight projects. So there you go. There's the list. If we don't immediately start to address the maintenance and operational issues that you've heard the cities and the counties and other folks talk about, the state, the county, and city systems, if we don't immediately have additional funding to address the congestion issues and the freight mobility issues, as a steward of the system, I'm extremely concerned that we're going to hit a concrete wall, and we're going to hit it sooner and later, because it takes time to get this into the pipeline too. So not only are we going to hit a concrete wall, but the funding on OTIA 3 is going to tail off here in a couple of years. And we've got a Oregon construction industry that's pumping a lot of money into this economy. I don't know if you saw that article in the Register Guard the other day about what the bridge projects are doing in Lane County. I mean, it was pretty significant. We've got an Oregon construction industry that's really delivering and putting Oregon folks to work at really family wage jobs. And if we don't have something that phases in with that, We're going to lose that construction capacity. It's going to have a negative impact on the economy. We're going to lose those jobs. And then what's worse is right now we've got gridlock. If you travel 205, if you travel I-5, we've all sat in gridlock on both of those. And the longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to be to address, and the cost of congestion study shows that it's a huge expense to the economy and the citizens of the state. So I would submit that we need to proceed on a measured basis. We need to proceed right now and in future sessions to address the funding issues in highway transportation and to increase the highway user fee, commonly known as the gas tax. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not clear on how this list would be used, because you said we would select from this list. So is we ODOT? And also, in light of your testimony that it would take a while to get these projects started, which it always does, what would we lose by having some sort of public hearing process that allowed there, as there has been in the past, there to be input from the public into where the money should be directed?
Well, ultimately, under the current law, the Oregon Transportation Commission would make the final selection on which projects are to be built. There is a very public process that goes on in regard to all projects, and as what I said earlier is many of these have been vetted through our local commissions on transportation, area commissions on transportation that are made up of local elected officials, county commissioners, mayors, and the private sector. Before these would ever go into a state improvement program, there has to be a public hearing on them. So you have that input at that level too. And there is public input at the commission level. So there is a process that we go through in regard to all projects. I mean, we
Our commission doesn't select projects out of thin air. We have it has been critical to us. We have criteria that prioritize and identify projects, and they're as objective as we possibly can make them. And we vet those through, like JPAC in the Portland metro area, and those projects are then we receive recommendations back from those organizations who also take public input. So. These are not projects that are pulled out of the air in a smoke-filled room.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair? I guess I'm still not clear, though. Is there a discrete list that there's a plan to put the name projects in this bill? Or
no. Excuse me.
So then what happens if a version of this bill passes through and we allocate an amount of money? Then how would this list turn into which specific projects got funded?
Well, what would happen is, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, what would happen is that there would be a dual process. First of all, these projects, if we're looking at the freight mobility projects, would be vetted through the Freight Advisory Committee, which is a legislatively established committee appointed by the director of the agency to address freight mobility issues. That committee would review it. In addition, the Area Commission on Transportation in the appropriate region would review it, and we would receive a recommendation and invite input from the public, and then we would receive recommendations back from them as to how we would prioritize these. So we're not earmarking these. First of all, if you look at the total is huge. Okay, we think the process is appropriate to get the public input to at the appropriate time we're ready to build these, to get the public input, to get the review, to get the freight community engaged, if it's a freight project, get the safety community engaged if it's a safety project, get the engineering community engaged if it's a deficient culvert or bridge project, and there's a very sophisticated, for example, for culvert and bridge deficient bridge projects in here. There's a very sophisticated methodology for identifying which one of those projects is the most urgent. So it would be a little different depending on the type of project that's proposed here. Okay, but in our experience, and again, I guess OTIA 3 is a really good example, the legislature directed us to expend, I think, $300 million on freight mobility projects. And we then went to the freight committee, had them identify, they identified $2 billion worth of projects, I think, of urgent need. And then they prioritized it. Then they made and that was reviewed by the various areas, and then it came to the commission for approval. And we approved it. My recollection is, and traditionally we approve those as long as the process has been open and objective. We approve those recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? We've heard today testimony from a number of people with the suggestion that our overall total road needs are substantially beyond our current fiscal capacity. Counties, I think, said essentially $500 million a year.
Yeah.
I'm not certain what yours are. And I think most of that that we're talking about is just for maintenance. It's not even for these new projects that you're talking about. What I've heard so far doesn't sound to me like a plan that even begins to maintain our current asset, let alone give us the capacity to grow it. What are your thoughts about that observation?
Well, My thoughts are this, that I've been on the commission a while, and I went through the 1999 experience, and the president of the Senate then proposed a 4-cent gas tax increase, and I, among others, held our breath, jumped up and down, and said we have to have 8 cents, and that was defeated 88-12, and that's seared into my memory. The needs are huge, but I think we're better off if we start to incrementally address them instead of trying, because my sense is if we go for the whole boat of it, we're going to have to get to that absolute crisis that none of us want to get to. If we go out for the mega package that funds everything, the only way, and that one will get referred. I don't think a modest package will get referred, by the way. I absolutely don't think it will if it is properly structured for this session. But if we do a big one, this one or next one or somewhere in the future, if we try to do it all one time, the only way that's ever going to pass, it will get referred, and the only way it'll ever pass is that everybody's sitting in gridlock on the highways in the state of Oregon, or they've got, you know, their front ends are getting knocked out every day, their automobiles by the potholes. That's the only way it's going to happen. So I'd like nothing more to have that funding, Representative Barnhart. I'd love it. Because we could do a good job of applying that, and the counties and the cities could. But I think there is a degree of reality that we have to deal with, and that is we need to start modestly, and we need to convince the public that we're delivering the right projects, and that's critical. We absolutely have to deliver the right projects and show the public that if we have an increase, that these dollars are going to go into infrastructure and that they're going to have an impact on their daily drives and the freight mobility.
I think, Mr. Chair, very quickly, I think your comments are spot on, and they echo the underpinnings of what the business proposal. If you look at that -A7 proposal, they are really taking monies just to try to catch us up. They've seen the disinvestment in a multi-billion-dollar asset. So the investment they promote is not comprehensive, but at least it catches us up. And if you see, they have language in there to index to keep us moving forward so we don't continue to fall back. So your comments are spot on, and they echo very well with what the business coalition has articulated.
Thank you. One last question, and that is at the very beginning of our hearing today, Mr. Clark suggested that we needed a work group to see if we could get a bill out in the next few weeks. What's your view on that issue?
Mr. Chair, I believe that there's an urgent need to do that, and there's a real need to do that. I hope that we could participate in that, and we would make the time immediately available to do so. I really believe that there's a need to get all the key players at the table to have a serious discussion on this at this time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, we would embrace it as well.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Again, I apologize to those who were not heard today. And with that, we will close the hearing, and the committee is adjourned.